What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Happy confused Wednesday. Often this is competition Wednesday, but that was kind of yesterday because the game is Saturday. We got Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt speaking today. I'm all turned upside down because Anthony's not here, but the very capable Metal Chris is in. But Chris, you don't like to be on YouTube, so I'm just keeping you. Get to be your big disembodied voice over there.
Yeah, that's kind of how I like it.
Yeah, so Chris, just that big voice you hear, and for the radio audience, it's the same. You never see any of us. If you saw me, I got a fresh haircut, so that's nice. But the YouTube audience, Chris just might be a voice at times today. Just a big old figment of your imagination, except for he's real. But you can't see him. So also someone you won't be able to see, Sam Fortier, but he is going to call us at 5 o'clock. Excited to talk to Sam. But we're going to start the show today with some of what Cliff had to say at his press conference as he and Jaden Daniels prepare for the Detroit Lions on Sunday. And I thought this was a very interesting quote from the Commanders offensive coordinator about a topic that is, I think, hotly debated within NFL circles, the value of the run game and what actually should be happening over the course of a game to manage a game, the value of it. And there's a lot of folks in the analytics kind of world that are just like, pass the ball pretty much all the time. Like, running the ball is a bit of a waste of a down. And if you look at things like EPA per play, like, it's correct. If you have an estimated points added, which is what EPA stands for, and you look at run plays versus pass plays, every time you pass the ball, the EPA is higher. So every time we pass the ball, we estimated add more points to the scoreboard versus the value of running the football. But we talked about this quite a bit last year with Eric Bieniemy, where there is actually a breaking point where that doesn't become true. You can't just say passing is more valuable than running, so don't do any running at all. Because there is a point where your total EPA is going to be maximal, where the run is used enough to make sure that the pass number stays high. Because if you never run the football, then teams can sit on your pass stuff and your pass value number comes down. Your goal isn't to have the highest possible the highest possible run. It's to have the highest possible combination of the two and then balance that out over the number of each that you call. And making teams respect running the football, not to mention what it does for your defense and keeping teams, for instance, like the Tampa Bay Bucks off the field, there's value in that. Your estimated points added doesn't necessarily account for, oh, hey, this 0-yard run was added or actually took away points on the board because you're now in a second and 10. But at least it took 40 seconds off the clock, and that's 40 seconds that Baker Mayfield doesn't have to work with or Jared Goff and company don't have to work with this weekend. So Kingsbury was asked today about staying committed to the run game, despite the fact that on Sunday, it wasn't very good.
It's helped me having a defensive head coach, I can tell you that much, because he lets it be known we need to run the football at times that I would maybe in my previous life be airing it out. But we're going to do whatever it takes to win, and we have good backs, and we've had a great scheme throughout the year. We faced some good fronts. I mean, those two guys inside there are as good as anybody we played against all year at Tampa, and the linebackers are tremendous players. So it was a challenge. Todd Bowles is one of the best defensive minds in the league and has been for a long time. So overall, it was a challenge, and we just kept plugging away at it, and Jaden made some plays with his feet that helped us out. But I really, having DQ and just him mentoring me in a way, if you will, just about sticking to the run game, how it affects the defense. You know, seeing it from that perspective has been good for me.
And I think that is 100% valid. I think there are defensive coaches who obviously way overdo it. And I think the previous iterations of NFL offenses probably way overdo this. But there's just an undeniable truth to what they're saying. I mean, look at the best teams in the league the last bunch of years. The Niners have been the best team in the NFC the past, what, 5-6 years? Dominant running team. The team that has flirted with upsetting them at times, the Philadelphia Eagles, have been a good running team even before they got Saquon Barkley. The Detroit Lions, they run the mess out of the football. And if you can do that and you control the game, it opens up bigger potential for chunk plays, let's say like 10 to 15 yards in that intermediate area because linebackers are cheating up to try to stop the run and there's a schematic element to it. But also your big explosive plays down the field because you get in these, hey, we ran the football effectively on first down. Okay, now it's 2nd and 4. Well, on 2nd and 4, I have my entire playbook open. On 2nd and 10, I'm just trying to get 5 yards so I can get to 3rd and 5 and keep it manageable. I'm not going to take a huge, big, low propensity, low success rate shot down the field on 2nd and 10 likely because, one, that is a huge risk of losing yardage and because it's a long developing play by nature. Like, unless it's a fade ball and you're not going to get the coverages on a 2nd and long that invite those. You're going to get those on like 3rd and short, man to man. We got to make sure we have resources everywhere, whatever. Like, okay, now we get our fade ball to the outside where it's a 3-step drop and a deep throw. But most of the time, you're not going to get those kind of coverages. You're going to get your zone mixes and things like that on a 2nd and 10 that it really is just kind of dedicated to keeping everything underneath and making sure that you don't pick up a chunk play and steal the first down out of a bad down and distance. So you have the schematic element and the risk element of, okay, now we have to drop back against a pass rush that might now make us 3rd and 18, and that's terrible. And if it's incomplete, then I'm in 3rd and 10, and that's terrible for me. So I'm just going to try to, you know, quick game something underneath, and can I get it to 3rd and manageable? Versus it's 2nd and 4. Okay, yeah, if I take a sack, like that's going to suck. But if I get if it's an incomplete pass down the field, okay, 3rd and 4, we can live with that. So I think that element of it kind of helps explain it. And if you look at the stats from over the weekend, look, man, Commanders rush game, I don't think I have to tell anybody, was real bad this weekend. Rush or expected EPA per rush. The Commanders running back, Brian Robinson, who had the most carries in the game, had a minus 4.7 total EPA. So on Brian Robinson's carries, allegedly, the Commanders, according to the EPA formula, lost nearly 5 points. So if you're an offensive coordinator, it'd be really easy to get away from that. Jeremy McNichols had just one carry. His was a minus 0.3. Let's see. Where is Eckler's in here somewhere? Austin Eckler, Jaden, his rushing attempts were minus EPA, which is actually pretty rare for him because often he scrambles and picks up first downs, which are huge point adders. But Eckler, oh, it's because I need to go to the next page. Eckler, I think, actually had a decent day. His EPA in total was plus 1.1. So his EPA per rush, he had 8 attempts, whatever. It's like 0.3 points. Compared to, if we go to the passing stats from the weekend and say, hey, every time Jaden Daniels dropped back, how much was that worth? His EPA per drop back was 0.25 every drop back. So you're scoring every time Jaden Daniels drops back a quarter of a point. And so for Dan Quinn to be like, look, I know that that is part of the equation here, but I need you to keep running it. I need you to find ways because we need this clock to run, is not only how they won the Tampa game, where all of a sudden they don't punt. They have 35 minutes time of possession. They dominate in other areas that don't necessarily just correlate with one stat. It's why stats require context. It's why analytics on their own isn't just a big spreadsheet of information. It's the interpretation of the data. you have all these other things that not only won them the game against Tampa, but are necessary to win against Detroit. Because if you get in a shootout against Detroit, I don't think you're going to win. I think Detroit has more weapons, more options, and the Commanders' defense has given up more stuff. Even everyone loves to talk about how injured Detroit is, but have they actually played bad? No, they haven't. So watching this weekend and watching how Cliff and Dan together manage this game, I think is really, really interesting as a not just a subplot, perhaps the plot of the game. Because for as much as we talk about, and by we, I mean specifically, I on this show and Logan and I on Take Command, we talk about these game scripts. We talk about game flow. This is how you manage it. Saying like, hey, we want to possess the ball. Okay, that's really easy, but how do you go about it? It's finding things that can both move you forward because, okay, you ran the ball three times nowhere. That's three and out. You didn't actually, sure, it's better than three incomplete passes and going three and out. You wasted, a minute 40 off the clock versus, 18 seconds. Cool. That's better. But how do you find things that both keep the clock moving and move you forward? And whether it's the screen game, whether it's the right runs at the right times, whether it is quarterback run game, whether it's the RPO game. Cliff did a masterful job of that against Tampa, and it set them up to obviously go down and win that game late with Jaden and company leading that final drive to set up the doink, to set up the win and this matchup against Detroit this weekend. Hear more from Kingsbury next, and then still to come on the show today, I do believe Linnell is going to pop back in for some football therapy at 5:30. We'll sit him down on the proverbial couch because we don't have an actual couch, and see what's on the young man's mind. See if we can, after he's all riled up from arguing with the Rooster, see if we can get him back down to earth before he just does it again on Throwdown Thursday tomorrow. We also have a great chat with Vince Wilfork coming up in just a little bit. The two-time Super Bowl champion and I got to chat yesterday morning. We talked mostly about football, but we talked a little food as well. And then actually recorded a crossover edition of Take Command earlier today with one of our colleagues up in Detroit. So we're going to play a little bit of that for you a little bit later on in the show as well. But more from Kingsbury on the late-game situational dominance of the Commanders next on The Hoffman Show. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up in just a little bit, a discussion with Zach Clark, who is the host of the Detroit Football Network podcast, which is the Take Command of Detroit, if you will, on this matchup this weekend. Looking forward to sharing that with you. Vince Wilfork, 6:30 tonight. You will hear that conversation with the big fella. So very much looking forward to that. We are locked and loaded. Sam Fortier live at 5 as well here for Not My Beat. Right now, let's continue on hearing a little bit more from Cliff Kingsbury. You'll hear much more from Cliff in our pick six at 6. And of course, you'll hear from Joe Witt Jr. as well. But Cliff was asked a lot about the late game situations and how they have continued to be so unprecedentedly good in these situations. Obviously, they've won, 5 straight games on the final play from scrimmage, which is just a preposterous streak. And someone asked me earlier today, can they keep it going? I was like, yeah, they can. It'd be nice if they didn't have to. It'd be nice if they could seal it up a little bit sooner. But by the same token, like, they're not scared of these situations. And that's something that, even though he's the one calling those plays down the stretch, he credits, Cliff Kingsbury does, Dan Quinn for that preparedness.
Dan's done a tremendous job of just, we talk about our offense being situational masters and repping those things and those type 4-minute drills or 2-minute drills or, centering right, centering left. So we get them a bunch multiple times each week, and when they show up, the guys are, they've been through it. There's a calm because they've been through it, and they've just executed at a high level when that number's been called.
And we've heard this now from a number of people, but nobody practices more situational football than the Commanders. There might be other teams that do as much, but there's no team that most of us have ever seen. When I say most of us, I mean those of us who cover football for a living. Guys like John Keim, who've been doing this for 30 years. Guys like Charles Davis from CBS talked to him about this as he's called a couple of games this year. And on down the list of analysts that have interacted with this staff, they can't remember ever a team handling situational football quite like this. And it's not just the amount of time they spend on it on the practice field of, okay, let's put 4 minutes on the clock, or I don't know, let me pick a random number. 4 minutes, 41 seconds on the clock. We need to go and kill as much time as possible and then kick a game-winning field goal. It's exactly the situation they had on Sunday. And I doubt they practice with 4:41 on the clock, but I guarantee you they've done some version of that. A offensive version of the four-minute drill where you're tied. Right? 4 minute offense is typically you have a lead and you got to kill the clock. 4 minute is kind of the same thing when you're tied, though. You want to kill the clock with enough time to kick the game winner in the end. You want to manage the clock so that you do not give the other team a chance. And they did that picture perfectly. And it's because they've done it dozens and dozens and dozens of times, not just during the season, but going back to the summer. In training camp, where we did get to see that, in the spring, where we got to witness that as well. But I mean, they did this in like walkthroughs before we were even out there in the spring, like phase one of OTAs against the coaches. They're not even allowed to practice like offense on defense. I don't even know what they're like, what they're doing at that point, because we don't get to see that as a media. I was like, oh, they're out there with the strength coaches. I guess they're somehow doing situational work. Like, it was crazy. Like, the first things they talked about. They also do it in meetings. Like, they have an extra situational meeting that they do specifically to let Dave Gardy, who they hired this offseason, and to be their situational guru and their rules guru, say, hey, these are things that came up. These are some things that you should be thinking about as we get down the stretch, X, Y, Z. Like, they are all over it, and that goes from DQ saying, I'm going to be a master of situational football. As for how Cliff manages it from like an emotional standpoint, well, he can't really rely on anybody else for that. Here's how he's felt recently during these late-game heroics performed by Jaden Daniels.
Get a tighter fade to hide the gray hairs, I'll tell you how much. I do not love it, but it's been a fun group. They're resilient as hell. They keep fighting no matter what. And you know, on the sideline, you always feel like you have a chance, and that's been fun to be a part of.
I can't imagine what it's like to know, like, hey, we've got a chance, but I got to make sure that I get the right play call in, that I don't mess this up. And they have done a masterful job of doing just that. Cliff has not messed it up. He's given chances. And I think the other thing, too, is like, there's kind of a calmness is one word for it. A confidence is another word for it. But I can't think of what like the one word synonym would be for lack of panic. But there are times in some of these drives where I'm like, y'all got to go. Like, y'all need to hurry up a little bit. Now's not the time to run the football. Now's not the time to run the screen. Now's not the time to do X, Y, Z. And they always wind up winning in the end. And I'm like, well, screw me. Like, what do I know? Clearly nothing. From a tempo standpoint, there are times I'm like, I think y'all can go a little bit faster. But they are so on it that there is no panic. There is no, we got to get to the line, when they don't actually have to get to the line. There's a minute 23 to go. You got 60 yards to drive. And it's like, can y'all pick up the pace? And it's like, absolutely not. We're fine. We don't need to call the timeout right now. Dan Quinn on it as soon as he needs to be. But they have consistently just been able to hit all the right buttons. And sure, you have to occasionally then get lucky and you have to have a big one. The Dallas one doesn't happen the way it does. Even if Marcus Mariota converts the 4th-and-1 and gets 5 yards, it's different because he got 30. So you have to make a play at some point, but they seemingly always have found the play. And I think that is really, really special. Now, of course, it helps when you have a really, really special guy who is triggering all of it at the quarterback position. And Cliff was also asked today if there's anything he's learned. I feel like he's asked this question every week. But anything new when Jaden does something else that we've never seen happen before, a rookie leading that kind of drive? What has he learned about Jaden as this season has progressed?
Every week I think something new comes up that's specific to the game, but the poise, the work ethic throughout the week, the mentality, doesn't waver. I mean, he showed up same time this week every morning early and put in the same work he did the week before and the previous 16 weeks. So I think there's specific instances that continue to help him grow and evolve as a player, but he's very consistent in his approach and has been since he got here.
There's something that Mitch Tischler told us yesterday when he joined us for Not My Beat that I thought was really spectacular and speaks to an approach that Quinn has implemented, that Jaden has lived, that Cliff and Joe Witt, I think, also have done a great job of holding to and their units on down, which is this. You would think that there would be a this is house money approach for Washington at this point. And frankly, as an analyst, like from the outside, I have a bit of that. I'm like, whatever happens at this point happens. This is what it is. They could win the Super Bowl or play in the Super Bowl. And I'm like, if they lose, like, hell of a season. Hang any banner you want. This is fantastic. They're not thinking like that. And not only are they not just thinking like, whatever, if we lose, which, like, you shouldn't as a competitor. If I was in the locker room, it'd be different. I would not have that mentality. I'd be like, why? We've asked why not us all year. Why would that change now? But it's instead of looking at Detroit and being like, they're the big bag bullies on the block, they're the number one seed, it's they have to go through us. And that's the sign this week. That's the thing that Mitch relayed from being there in the locker room, which is why I love having him on Tuesdays. Very simply, instead of thinking we have to go to and through Detroit, it's anybody, anytime, anywhere. And this happens to be 8:15, the Detroit Lions at Ford Field Saturday night. But they have to go through us, even though we're coming to them. And I think that mentality is really cool. And I think that consistency of every week, no matter where, no matter who, no matter when, they got to go through us. And the sameness of the approach has been a very healthy thing for this team all season long. When we get back, let's get to know the Detroit side of it a little bit better. Had a great conversation this morning with Zach Clark, who hosts our Odyssey sports podcast up in Detroit. So a little crossover edition of Take Command that we're going to share most of with you next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And earlier today, I had the great pleasure of chatting with Zach Clark, who is the host of our Detroit podcast, Detroit Lions podcast, up at our sister stations at Odyssey in Detroit. And so without further ado, let's get to know the opponent a little bit better and how they're approaching this game. And then we'll chat even more about what went down in Ashburn today with Sam Fortier at 5 o'clock.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It is the Take Command podcast. It is also the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Craig Hoffman, the host of Take Command, our Odyssey sports podcast on the Commanders. And it's my pleasure to be here with Zach Clark, with the co-host, of course, of the Detroit Football Network podcast. Half the audience, Zach, already knew one half of that. Half the audience knew the other half. But time to talk a little playoff football between Washington and Detroit. Who would have thought, Zach? Who would have thought?
I'll tell you what, the Commanders have had one of the most exciting seasons that I can remember. And certainly the Lions season has been exciting, but and I can't believe I'm going to say this, it's gone as almost as expected. There's been some hiccups, but we expected the Lions to be a really good football team this year, and they have been. The Commanders have been just thrilling in the way that they've won football games, you know, as a Detroiter and an NFC North member. Watching them humiliate the Bears was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. I'd love to see it over and over and over again. So I'm excited for an opportunity to see them up close and personal. I've watched, but now I'm going to experience. I'm looking forward to it.
I chuckled pretty hard the other day. I was listening to the Athletic Football Show, and my guy Robert Mays, who's obviously a Bears fan for those that don't know, and he's just like, man, every time the Commanders play, I'm having fun, I'm watching them, and then they have to show the flashback to the Hail Mary, and I'm like, how did I get roped into this? And, you know, also, Zach, you probably don't know this, but I had quite the back and forth with Bears fans that week. They were obnoxious and terrible all week long, and so the amount of pettiness I had after that game was unseen in the history of this show otherwise. So
satisfying was that for you, though? I had to feel so good.
Amazing.
The way, and especially with the, I can't think of the guy's name, but he was taunting the crowd. He's in the wrong spot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, yes.
It's amazing. It was amazing. It was so good. I was in the building. It was amazing. Fantastic. Before we get to this game, just a quick, I think I'd be remiss to not ask you about kind of how Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes and everybody in Detroit has built this, because I think Detroit is the model in many ways for Washington in terms of how they're going about this. Now, there are some key differences. Obviously, in Detroit, you guys with the veteran quarterback route, you trade Stafford, get Goff. That works out tremendously. This roster is outstanding for Washington. They're in year one of what we hope to be an eventual outstanding roster, but a lot of this is quarterback powered because they had the rookie kind of more traditional way to build it from in-house. But in terms of implementing a play style, a culture, a way of going about your business, at what point during the Dan Campbell, Brad Holmes build did you guys kind of go, oh, like a lot of coaches say this stuff, they're about it and it's working? Because obviously it didn't start great, that 3-13 first season, but I think, and then Hard Knocks happens and everyone's all excited. That season starts bad, but ends amazing. And they've basically been the best team in football for 2.5 years at this point. So like, what are some of the things that you remember early on in that build latching onto being like, you know, they may be onto something here?
I think one of the first things is that Dan Campbell embraced the environment of the city and the team and its communal feel immediately. He bought in, he realized, and he'd played here before. I think that was something that people don't forget but need to realize. In fact, he was on the 0-16 team. So he knows what this is like. He knows what the depths of despair have been. I do think Hard Knocks was the biggest light bulb moment, even for us in Detroit, because even here, we don't get that kind of access that Hard Knocks gets, right? And so I think that was a big one. And also, that felt nice for us. And this is going to sound odd, but, you know, we're in Detroit. People were like, other people were like, oh, that looks nice. I'm like, yes, it is nice. Look at this. I think the most important thing, though, Craig, is, especially with the last regime, we were always trying to be somebody else. We should do what the Patriots do. We should do what somebody else does. Brad and Dan have done what they do. It's their own model that they've created for themselves. I'm not trying to shoehorn something else in. And I think a lot of that credit goes to Sheila Ford Hamp. I don't know what made Mrs. Ford hand it over, but Sheila made some really astute personnel choices, starting with Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, and it just has paid off. And the other thing with the Lions, I mean, we can go on a laundry list of draft picks that have not worked out very well, but not in the last 3 years. They've almost all worked out spectacularly, and some of them even better than you could think of. And so I just think from the foundation up, watching a consistent build, living in your own environment, being who you are and embracing it the whole time and not wavering. I mean, I know most football coaches say, well, you know, we don't listen to that, or the media says this. You know, the Lions have taken a lot of criticism for some of the things they've done, not in a super crazy way, but a lot of the aggressiveness, right? Some of the things Dan Campbell said early on gave people the impression that he wasn't very smart. And I think that's a miscalculation on a lot of people's part that has gone away. I can't think of a time when the Lions had coaches in demand. No coach in the Lions history, head coach, has ever coached ever again. Think about that.
Wow.
No Lions head coach has ever been a head coach ever again.
Wow.
The head coach.
That's insane.
And now they're coming after our assistants, which is annoying, but it's also like, we've arrived.
Right. Those are champagne problems. The other thing that you talk about, Dan Campbell's intelligence, I think the thing that comes across in Hard Knocks is there's an emotional intelligence there, the way he connects with people. And that's something that DQ has. And, you know, as we're going through the process of hiring a coach last year, I'm fortunate enough that the co-host of, apparently on this show, I only talk with very bearded men because Logan Paulson played for Dan in Atlanta. And he's like, Dan is just different. Like, the the way he's my favorite head coach I ever played for. And like Logan played for Kyle and loves Kyle Shanahan, thinks he's a genius, and you know, who wouldn't? And you know, those two had a great relationship, and I, as far as I know, still have a good one. But like they, the way Logan talked about Dan and the way he operated the program, I was like, I'm kind of intrigued by this as someone who looks into the psychological stuff quite a bit. And I think that has been a really cool thing. And I think there's something that's mirrored there too between the two Dans, is there's both an emotional intelligence and connection and brotherhood with also a toughness, because sometimes those two things get kind of conflated on opposite sides of like, you can't be emotionally in touch and like tough and masculine. It's like, no, that's actually the most tough way you can be, is that you are vulnerable and you are connected to the people next to you. And it's the best of sports. It's what it's all about. And I think there are arguably no two franchises that do that better than what Detroit has been doing the last 3 years, and then what Washington did this year in a pretty remarkable way. And that then allows you to play better on the field and implement the play style and all those things. But I don't want to go too much high level here. I want to get into the game. So I'll just wrap with this. My favorite quote, perhaps of any coach I've heard in the last 5 years, is from Campbell earlier this season, where in one of the post-game locker rooms, he goes, "It doesn't matter who puts on our uniform. Like, we are who we are," is basically the crux of it. And that's not how the NFL is supposed to work. It's supposed to be a talent league. But the fact that they have been able to, no matter who has come through that building with all the injuries that they've had on defense, be the same team and implement that play style, play with the same physicality, not change their calls. They just get guys up to speed and say, "You're a Lion. Here's the jersey. This is how we do." And then they go get down. I think that is remarkable and is a huge reason why they're the number one seed and favored by double digits on divisional weekend against a very good Washington team.
Yeah. And just to put a bow on that, we were talking to the great Doc Walker last night, and he called Dan and Dan cousins. And I just love it. I love that, because
yeah,
I do feel that way. Everything that you said is true. And I just think, and this is not a patronizing pat you on the head thing, but we're just you in the future. I really believe
that. Right. No, I totally agree with that. 100%. So, all right, let's get into the game. Let's get into the X's and O's of it all. As you guys get to your game preview this week, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. Logan and I will do our big, giant X's and O's. Logan's watched way too much tape film review on Thursday. But I certainly have some big topics, that things that I think are going to be important. What's the number one thing for you, though, that you think determines the outcome of this game on Saturday night?
You know, I think the easy thing is to say the defense, because that's what struggled so much. But the Lions and their run game and how David Montgomery folds back in and how the Commanders deal with that is going to be wildly interesting, because, and I think that's true for Lions fans too, because all season long, it's been a 50-50 split. Gibbs, Montgomery, Montgomery, Gibbs, Gibbs, Montgomery. Their carries are almost identical until a couple of weeks ago. Jahmyr Gibbs on his own has been fantastic. NFC Player of the Week, NFC Player of the Month to end the season. He's been spectacular. How does that work with Montgomery coming back? I don't worry about an ego thing. I just worry about a game plan thing. They had a system. The system gets upset. Things don't change much productivity-wise. So how do you go back to that? And that's the first thing I'll be looking at.
Yeah, I think that plays into my number one thing, which is, what is the game script? What is it that actually, like, how does this game play out? Because there's ways, and a lot of them, if you think of it like the NBA draft lottery, there's 1,000 combinations, and there's a lot of ping pong ball combinations, unfortunately, on our side of it, that end with Detroit winning by a lot, because their offense is so potent. The good news for Washington, though, is the game script they just played against Tampa is how they win this game. Can they control the ball? And I think against Detroit, in some ways, it's easier because Tampa's run defense is very, very good. Running inside on them is almost impossible with the combination of speed of and quickness of Kalijah Kansi, power of Vita Vea. And Detroit, thanks to a lot of injuries, as tough and as physical as they play, you can run on them a little bit. Problem is, a lot of teams don't get the opportunity to, because their offense is so good that they're up by a million points by the second quarter, and then they're goodbye to your running game. So to me, but what you just said of, can Detroit control the ball, shorten the game, then Washington's kind of looking to do the same thing. I really do wonder about kind of this game script, because I think a lot of people expect a 40 to 30 type of game, and I just don't know if there's going to be enough possessions to actually have a 40 to 30 type game.
And I see why people would think that. The Lions are at their best when they win the toss and eat up like an 8-minute drive on the ground. It puts it puts the opposition on their heels, especially when you're at home. And then at that point, if you can't be successful immediately, the crowd goes nuts and you're only down 7-0, but you're in it deep. And so I do think that ball control is where this game is won and lost. And I do, you're right. The over under in that Minnesota game, I was there at week 18. It was like 50 something. And it didn't get past 40 barely. And I think that's going to be a big part of it. Could this be a shootout? Absolutely. You were talking about ping pong balls. I think a good chunk of those ping pong balls landed in a shootout, maybe in the second half. But I do think if both teams, whoever controls, and this is, I know, is light work, whoever controls the ball is going to have success. But in this situation, I think it means even more. And my second thing on that, I'm just so excited and curious to see how Jaden Daniels commands this Commanders offense and what that looks like in a playoff situation where he's on the road again. That's the thing. People say, well, you know, young kid, can't trust rookie quarterback. Sure. Are you sure? Because, I mean, he looked pretty good last week, and now, brimming with confidence.
He's not young, though, for a rookie. That's the thing. Like, he's 24 years old. Like, he's very experienced. He played way more games in college than most guys did. And, like, I don't think there's a lot of stuff that transfers, you know, in terms of difficulty level from college to the NFL. But when it comes to communicating and it comes to all these things, like, Saturday night in Tuscaloosa or Saturday night in the Swamp down in Gainesville, like, that's – y'all's crowd is maybe the best in the NFL. Like, Detroit's insane, but I don't know how much more. Like, it's a 10 compared to the 10 of Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. Like, he's been in that atmosphere before.
And I think that is one of the things that makes him so dangerous is he's got this calmness about him, even in these hyper situations. But as soon as the ball is snapped, the calm kind of translates into this like electricity. And I'll tell you what, I wish the Lions defense was healthier for 1,000 reasons. But I would love to see him against a full strength Lions defense because I think it would still be impressive. And I'll be very curious to see how the Lions work in their secondary because that had to have been, it was their weakness early on, but last season certainly. And you know, this year it was not their strength because of how good the front was. But then, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks in, the front dissolves and, you know, Joseph and Branch have been great. Amik Robertson's played a lot better. So be curious to see how that works out.
Yeah, the Amik Robertson thing, I mean, what he did to JJ in week 18 was pretty wild.
I do think some of that, though, I'll be careful.
They've known each other since high school.
And there's a chip there, right? Because they're both from Louisiana. One went to LSU, one went to La Tech. They're not the same, right? And so I think there was a personal element to it. But you said something a lot earlier. Everything's personal for these guys. I think that's true across the board in the NFL, but that emotional buy-in that they have with each other, everything is a slight. Everything is disrespectful. And they look what they did to the Cowboys. I mean, how many times did the offensive lineman throw a pass in that game? 3 times?
Yeah.
This is what happened the year before that. They remembered.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's interesting because, I mean, talk about personal slights, like what Amon-Ra St. Brown has said about De'Ami Brown, and I get it from Amon-Ra's perspective, and he's been the far better player, but De'Ami all of a sudden, like, he's having the best year of his career, arguably he just had the best game of his career. Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, Terry McLaurin is always feeling slighted when he gets out on the field. He's like, watch me, I'm a third round pick, and people don't think I'm that good because my quarterbacks have been a circus, you know, carousel of nothingness until this year. Now look at me go. So I think there's a lot of that. And because of the way the Lions play schematically, they play a ton of man-to-man. Like, there's opportunities for those guys to make plays. When teams get the Lions defensively, like the offenses that have had good games against Detroit, even though often Detroit's offense has been able to, you know, just raise the bar to a level that they can't get to. What are some of the ways they get got? Is it miscommunication, some of that man coverage? Is it big gashes in the run game? Like, what is Washington going to be trying to take advantage of for Detroit?
I do think there is, and we'll see how he responds. Terrion Arnold is a lot of fun. He's going to be a very good player, but he gets got quite a bit. And some of that is he'll get burned, or instead of getting burned, he'll commit a penalty. And so he gets picked on quite a bit. But to me, the most frustrating thing has been, and last year it was much worse, the Lions at times when they're off their game struggle on third and medium ish in situations where you should be able to put people away. The drives are allowed to prolong themselves. It doesn't happen a ton, but when you asked when they get got, it is things like that. And there's been a lot of miscommunication. At least there was for a period when Alex Anzalone was out But now that he's back quarterbacking the defense again, if you look at week 18, the coverage was better. And I think that's because he was out there sending signals. And that's no disrespect to what they've been doing when he was out. But his presence, Jack Campbell's been fantastic. He was wearing the green dot. But Alex Anzalone back last week showed up more than just in what he did. It's what others were able to do around him. You freeze up Branch a little bit. So I think, you know, that's something that's been buttoned up. But still, the Lions are vulnerable defensively. It's just... It's their weakness, and it was not their strength going in, but certainly now. I mean, goodness.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting elements of that from a communication standpoint is the Washington no huddle. It's not necessarily hurry up, but what it does is it puts pressure on defenses to communicate without a huddle. You have to be able to get lined up quickly, because even though they're subbing in and out, and like you get your chance to match the substitutions, and there's time, if they're on the ball, you have to be ready and you have to communicate. And Kliff does a really good job as an offensive coordinator of putting defenders in conflict. And whether that's with the RPO game, or whether that is in the zone game, or whether that's with the route combinations and some kind of twists on some, I would say, more standard NFL route concepts of, we're just going to put a guy that looks like, you know, it looks like spot that you've seen 1,000 times in these West Coast offenses, but we put a little twist on it that guy, that linebacker, that DB, like he doesn't know what to do. And to get that stuff communicated and to be ready for it is a lot harder when you can't come together between every snap and the crowd's going to be loud as hell. And that, you know, Detroit's defense is used to dealing with that of like, hey, we're loud, or our crowd is loud and behind us, but like we have to communicate through it. So I think that's a huge element. Last thing I want to ask you before we flip sides of the ball, and obviously if you have any questions back, fire away, but like how have they handled quarterbacks who scramble / mobile quarterbacks? Because Jaden is arguably outside of, like, he and Lamar are in a class on their own. They are 850-yard, you know, rushing quarterbacks. Their slipperiness, the way that they get out of the pocket, like, they are just different. How have they handled mobile quarterbacks in general, and especially those that have a quarterback run element to them?
These are the things that keep people like me up at night. The Lions have, over the last couple of years, the last several years, really struggled. I mean, it has been a challenge. This year, though, they have been better. I think, I don't want to call them undisciplined in the past, but in that specific sense of staying home and staying alert, they feel more disciplined this season. But that is going to be an issue. And the thing is, they've not seen a ton of them. And I'm not saying there are a ton of guys like Jaden Daniels, but let me look at Josh Allen. That he made things very, very difficult on the Detroit Lions. And he had a day of days, but part of that was because of what he can do with his legs. So I do think that is a concern for the Lions. I think they see a ton, and something they certainly have, right? It's not something you can simulate. How do you simulate Jaden Daniels in practice, especially when Goff is your quarterback?
Yeah, good luck. You have to put like your fastest guy back there and pretend that every throw that he makes that is terrible actually was complete.
Correct.
Like, sorry, guys. Yeah. You have to know that that's a completion in the game. But you mentioned like some of those third and six, third and medium type of situations. Like, if you're going to play man coverage against Jaden Daniels without a spy, without anything, like, that's a tough ask, because if you cover everybody, he's going to take off. Your eyes are not on the quarterback. So a lot of teams wind up playing zone, or last week Tampa used spy, or I should say a spy, or sometimes they had two guys spying him, which was hilarious to watch. And that means you're short on the coverage, or you're short on the actual pass rush. Like, why is Tampa rushing three? They're the blitz happiest team in the league. Oh, because they have two spies sitting in the middle of the field on Jaden Daniels, covering no one, just making sure he doesn't run. And he's a good enough passer that's not really a viable strategy either. And in some ways, like, this is why it's such a quarterback driven sport. And again, we're going to talk about the Detroit offense here in a second. And I have more concerns about Washington's ability to stop Detroit's offense than I do Detroit figuring something out. But there is only, for a guy like Daniels, who is good at everything, there's only so much you can do. You kind of have to hope he has a mediocre or bad day. And he hasn't had a lot of bad days. So now what that ultimately means in the red zone, and can you at least make that into field goals versus touchdowns? Like, there's, you know, can you limit the explosive plays? Like, if I'm Aaron Glenn this week, that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about, is like, hey, we're going to be aggressive, we're going to be us, but like, you know, Joseph Branch, like if you're deep, like you better stay deep and you better fade 17 side of it. Like you better be over on McLaren's side because they're going to take their shots. Like Kirby Joseph, go get you a pick. Just bait him into it to make him think he's all alone. Like then get over the top and go catch it. Like those are the kinds of things that you're going to have to do to stop this Washington offense, just because that's what you have to do to stop this Washington offense. That's been one of the best this year, although not the best, because that's the Detroit side.
A fantastic conversation that you can hear the rest of with Zach Clark in the Take Command feed. We talked about the defense for Washington and how they stopped that juggernaut Detroit offense to close out the show. And, of course, Logan and I will still do our full preview show. We'll tape that tomorrow, get it out to you middle of the day, early afternoon, as soon as we are done recording it. And our producer is able to cut it up and put it in the feed and do all the things that we have to do on the production side. So look for that tomorrow. Plenty of previews still to come here on the Hoffman Show, including what went down today in Ashburn. Apparently, they got a second locker room session today in Ashburn. So we're having to play shuffle the deck here. So the good news is we can take your calls. I was trying to find a place to do that today, and we had a bunch of stuff going on. And then Sam 48 texted me about 5 minutes ago and said, hey, they're reopening the locker room at 5 o'clock. So I can still join you as soon as the locker room is done, but I gotta shift things around. So up next, your calls on this game, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I'd love to get this. What's one thing you feel good about going into Saturday night? What's one thing that scares the daylights out of you? If you only got one that of either of those, that's fine. But a thing that you feel good about for the Commanders against the Lions, and one thing that scares you, 301-230-0980. Your phone calls next.